Hello, you're listening to Your Politics, RTE's weekly politics podcast from our team here at Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler. With me, my colleagues Joe McGrailig, Juliet Gash and Paul Cunningham. It's the last day of the Dáil term and it's a wrap from Paul Cunningham too.
It certainly is. After 7 years gracing the corridors of Leinster House, I'm packing up my bag and going back to Donnybrook, where I have the real joy of becoming a radio news presenter. But I've really enjoyed my time here. I've learned an awful lot. That was one of the things. You learn a lot.
What did you learn, Paul?
Not quite sure, but I learned a lot. And part of it was just the dynamic of politics and how it works, of the politicians individually and how that can have a motivation for them achieving stuff, about how relationships count a lot. You might think it's policy, but it's actually people engaging often in little corridors, coming to a decision and then getting things through. I thought it was also really fascinating that some of the theatre, which initially attracts you, it's the minutiae by the end of it, by year 5, 6 or 7. It was how those decisions were taken, who was involved and at what point, and that became the pivot for...
As opposed to the big argy-bargy set.
Exactly.
Scenes. Yeah.
And they now sort of, because they're so performative and they're for social media, those are the bits that I begin to yawn at, and I'm just interested in where is the legislation going and who's doing what to whom, why. Something a bit like a sort of a Agatha Christie novel. Because there's a fair bit of cloak and dagger going on as well.
So no longer will we see you sitting at the bottom of the stairs there on the couches just waiting for a politician to go past to nab them and try and get a bit of information.
But you know the rules of the House, Leinster House, which don't allow you to engage on political issues at the couch at the bottom of the stairs at the Dáil Chamber.
When you'd have a social conversation with the passing TD, Paul, I often saw you sitting around there.
That's why I lost 10 kilos doing this job, because I'm walking up and down trying to catch accidental on purpose conversations with people the whole time.
Just social exchange.
But it's been great fun. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the podcast too. I mean, this is long running, one of RTE's longest running podcasts, and still wonderfully successful, Áine, if I may say so myself. Yeah.
Well, you'll be on the other podcast. You're deserting us, aren't you?
Yes, I'm going over to the enemy. And then, of course, I'll be parading that podcast.
Yes, of course.
All right. Well, let's get back to the story of the week. Has to be this, finally, the long awaited publication of the Fianna Fáil report, the inquiry into what went wrong in the Jim Gavin presidential campaign. 28 pages, big 5-hour parliamentary party meeting, apparently very grumpy until Timmy Dooley tried to suggest that Billy Kelleher and the Taoiseach go for a drink at the end and sort out their difficulties or their issues or whatever. What did we learn about who knew what when, about the fact that Jim Gavin had this unpaid debt to a former tenant that he didn't recollect until, well, the cock only crowed 3 times. Jim Gavin didn't recollect 4 or 5 times.
Until he went on the Week in Politics with you on your programme, Áine.
He still didn't recollect at that stage. It was only when the rug was pulled under him later that afternoon when Micheál Martin and Jack Chambers... And you know what? I just want to say this at the end of the year. It's one of the big questions I have from the year, Joe. Why Jim Gavin was let come on the debate on the Week in Politics? A big set-piece debate. It was going to come up. At that stage, the party hierarchy knew... There was a tenant, knew there was this debt, and knew that Jim Gavin seemed not to have a story to explain it.
Yeah, it seemed a mystery from the very beginning when it became clear before he was ever even selected that there was an issue that the media were aware of, in this case Fionnán Sheehan was aware of. And, you know, he mentioned he didn't give all of the details at that point, but it was enough to be able to ring up Deirdre Galland, the Taoiseach's advisor, and say, look, this is an issue, it's to do with the tenant, and we want to get some more information on it. And then the Taoiseach was made aware of that, and Sean Dorgan was made aware of that, the General Secretary of Fianna Fáil.
And TD John Lahart is also saying there are questions around this.
Yes, yeah, so we're a couple of days out from the actual selection, which we also know now that whole process was going on through June and July and August. When the general impression was given that Fianna Fáil were going to decide all this in September. And so nobody was maybe coming forward
but
in that period.
I wouldn't have a problem with that. I mean, there's always a bit of cloak and dagger. A leader's always going to have a few ideas about who they want through the summer, and they were going to land on someone. What's clear is Jim Gavin was the person who Micheál Martin decided he wanted to advance.
Bizarrely, when he was aware of these problems.
Well, then the issue comes down to, well, what exactly was he aware? There was aware that someone had said something. And what Fianna Fáil politicians, the leadership has been saying is that, but an awful lot of people were saying an awful lot of things about Jim Gavin, some of it scandalously untrue. And so this was the sort of the wash which was taking place.
But the thing there is that, yes, of course, they're saying that lots of falsehoods being spread at that time. But when someone with, you know, a seasoned journalist comes to you with something that's a red flag, the rent issue, the tenant issue, those are just not issues you want dogging a candidate during a campaign, and you don't dig further than anything there. No, can't remember. That's the difficulty.
Yeah, that's the mystery.
Nothing was available in public documents.
Yeah, yeah. And they asked,
what was it to do? Now, Fiona made a lovely offer, where he said on Morning Ireland that no one from Fianna Fáil came to me and asked me. I think a few politicians might have had a concern about going to a journalist and saying, we have a bit of a problem here.
But he was able to go away and corroborate the tenant's story by looking at public records. So if he
through
could
the tenant,
go,
well, through the tenant giving him the information. So the question would be, would he have been able to be successful without having, who was a journalist himself and clearly aware of records and how to keep them, would Fianna Fáil have been able to confirm what Fiona confirmed without having the tenant on their side? Mm. That's the question. I mean, the other thing is just like...
But it also took, because the report didn't really address the fact of, we know that Deirdre Galán was contacted and Sean Dorgan was informed and so on. We know that Jim Gavin was asked on several occasions, but it was never clear in the 28-page report when Micheál Martin knew. And it was only when he went on with David McCullough the next day that became clear.
And I think that's, if you are going to have a comprehensive report, to have the leader of the party the day after the report becomes public giving new information does raise a question. And for people who are in that block who really are angry over how Micheál Martin handled all this and are offside Micheál completely, they also say, well, just how independent was this report anyway? It was effectively within the party. He's the head of the party. He's been there for donkey's years. And so it was under his sort of control around it as well. This is the suggestion that's
coming.
But there
was no smoking gun in there.
No, but if you take the combination of all of those facts that we just kicked around, there's enough there. And also there was the small issue that it's going to cost them up to 400 grand. And for some of the people who are in that block, they would say there was enough evidence there stacked up for Micheál Martin to say, listen, that's such a grievous error that, it, you know, I have to take responsibility, as he said he was doing, and say, look, it's over.
And there's that thing from the report, which isn't in the report, but that you can conclude after reading the report, is that it's a very centralised decision-making process that's going on in Fianna Fáil. And this is the accusation that has been levelled against Micheál Martin's leadership by an awful lot of people within the parliamentary party, that they don't have a say.
Well, the Young Turks and the grandees seem to be saying the same thing. And, and one of the interesting phrases from the week came from one of the grandees, Pat the Cope Gallagher, saying, this isn't over. And I suppose that's the question we're left with at the end of the week. Because there is a sense that a lot of the, you know, listening and viewing public kind of would go, well, we've a lot more important things to worry about than this. This is a Fianna Fáil problem. The question is, what damage has Micheál Martin shipped and how will that play out in 25?
But it's, if you want to call them the so-called rebels, the ball is now in their court. So they've had the report, they've had the five-hour row. Micheál Martin's come out and given his interview, and for his line, that's it. And his supporters are saying, draw a line under it, as you mentioned, that the ordinary public wants to know about how I'm going to deal with the cost of living. So the question for them is, what is the strategy? And they've got a couple of options, well, more than a couple. One is to launch something of a guerrilla campaign, use the weekly parliamentary party meetings to come back to a number of those themes, whether it's the presidency or, as Joe alluded to, the question of control and power within the party. Or another one is to go for the political big bazooka and to put down a letter of no confidence with 12 signatures, if they can get 12 signatures.
Yeah.
Is that... what are they going to do? And at the moment, the people I was talking to whose names we considered to be in that block, no one said to me what we're going to do is.
Yeah.
What they're saying, we're going back to our constituencies, we're listening to our membership, our party supporters, you know, but it's just hanging there.
More than one Fianna Fáil politician has mentioned to me, and indeed somebody on the National Executive has mentioned to me as well, the money issue. The money, €400,000 takes an awful lot of raising.
Up to
between 350 and 400,000. It takes an awful lot of ticket sales. It takes an awful lot of church gate collections. It takes an awful lot of collegiate work by ordinary members of the party. And that this, you know, when TDs go back over the Christmas, they get a chance to meet with their members. They'll, you know, And not every, of course, yeah. the membership is quite small, but those members will all have a view on this, and they'll no doubt make their views known about it. And that can add in and sort of add to the...
Many TDs, Joe, would say those views are already being conveyed to them in colourful, in tactical colour.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, you know, there'll be plenty of time to do it. And that will colour their approach, I imagine, as well. I mean, Micheál Martin is obviously going to survive this, but he's certainly damaged by it. He's certainly damaged by it, because to make such a huge miscalculation on a candidate who, by the way, even if there wasn't an issue around the tenant and €3,300, just was not the candidate. He didn't have the ability to engage in public debate. He didn't have the knowledge of what was going on.
But were they so dazzled by him on paper? Do you know what I mean? Like he had everything on paper. You know, the whole GAA nouse, his success in that regard, in terms of as well in the Defence Forces, as well in terms of state boards. He had it all, but he didn't have that X factor that you really actually need in terms of a campaign and a presidency.
Yeah, those two things, media performance and whether they put him through enough media performance. And the other question is internal polling. Yeah. You were talking about this guy who on paper seems to have something, so maybe the logical thing to be doing would be to go out and poll and see if your perception of
him... They polled before.
Actually, you know, if it racks up.
And for the party leader to have more than one meeting with him.
Yeah.
One meeting of... A lengthy meeting of a couple of hours.
Yeah.
A lengthy meeting, one vignette from the week. Presidential election campaigns never stop yielding, do they? Cynthia Ní Mhaireachtaí, the Fianna Fáil MEP, was talking to Rachel English on the News at One and gave us a very colourful image, didn't she, Juliet, as she described herself last July as somebody who was potentially interested in the presidency. And she heard that Mairead McGuinness was pulling out.
Yeah.
And she was sitting on her settee in her lovely West Cork holiday home. And she jumped up out of her settee and she said, "It's game on." There you go. We never knew that before.
Well, it's also, I think it's fair to say, Cynthia Ní Mhaireachtaí is not someone who suffers from self-doubt. She is a very strong, big personality. And look, maybe all of us should drink from Cynthia's cup and think, you know, I am the woman for that job.
Yeah.
And she definitely continues to believe that she would have been able to run and win.
Well, so, if you haven't heard that interview with Rachel English on the News at One on Wednesday, it is one worth listening back to. I was just thinking, because Micheál Martin wasn't having, I mean, he was tetchy this week, wasn't he?
Yeah,
there was
that
media exchange with Louise Byrne as well, wasn't there?
I know.
You could see him really controlling his temper.
Definitely. And it has been a torrid time. Like, you know, we can talk it through and it has been a difficult time for him. But yeah, like you say, that sort of temperamental, tetchy exchange with Louise Byrne from the Irish Examiner, where she was putting the questions that we've all been asking, that we've all been putting to him.
And this was before the report was published.
Exactly.
Because we had to all day Tuesday.
Yeah, she was also defending her position of the article that she had appeared over the weekend, and nothing in the report contravened what she reported.
Yeah.
See, it seems to me that on Tuesday morning, that was that exchange with Louise outside of government buildings. On Monday night, the statement came out from Micheál Martin, which was a very tetchy statement as well. Yeah. And he's saying that he hadn't yet received the report, that it was still been finalised, he said in the report. And it gave the impression that, and he said very clearly, what was written, he took exception to, and he suggested that there was inaccuracies
in the media reporting.
And the thing is that you know, later that night we discovered, oh, so the report is ready, and he has received the report at about 10 or half past 10 or 11 o'clock, and then we kicked into the process of the uncertainty the following day. Will there be a meeting? Will there not be a meeting? So he was under pressure at that point.
I mean, the trigger for that statement was a previous statement a couple of hours earlier from the three wise men.
Yes.
So this was Sean O'Farrell and Willie O'Dea and Pat the Cope Gallagher, who were calling for the report to be issued immediately. And so part of the tetch was from Micheál Martin saying, "I can't release a report until I've actually got it." And that is the rule which the parliamentary party itself had passed. Yes. So he was sort of, you know, kicking back.
And by contrast to Micheál Martin's difficult week, and of course he's concluding the week at the European Council where big questions about Ukraine and the future of Europe are being discussed. But by contrast, back at home, Juliet, Jim O'Callaghan, a name that's been mentioned as the potential future leader, certainly some of the would-be heavers would seem to favour him, but he hasn't shown any appetite to wield the knife yet. He's been getting a lot of very positive headlines this week. Yep. He was at that vigil at Herzog Park after the Bondi terrorist massacre with Chaim Herzog's granddaughter and talking about the issue of anti-Semitism. He was a guest on the Irish Times podcast. He was talking about how the immigration numbers are falling. So compare and contrast. One's had a much more positive week than the other.
And in that podcast, you know, he was saying that his position hasn't changed. He remains, you know, his position is that there is no, you know, that job at the head of Fianna Fáil is filled. But he was very comfortable, very relaxed talking about it. And his, I suppose, achievements in terms of regulating migration now that we've seen this hardening of approach to certainly asylum seeking. And that's what's been happening, and deportation flights have had an upsurge, an uptick anyway. So yeah, it's been, let's say, a better week for Jim O'Callaghan in terms of certainly perception, how he's perceived and how he's...
It was notable on the day after the five-hour parliamentary party meeting at Leaders' Questions when Micheál Martin was in the Dáil, sitting four seats down from him was Jim O'Callaghan.
Yeah. And also Jim O'Callaghan, when questioned about the whole Jim Gavin controversy, cleverly saying, I've got to take accountability for supporting Jim Gavin. We all have to
even
take
though he's, I mean, it was even very though much he a said leadership his initial reaction would have been to support within the party. And that, and he was one of the last, if not the last, to declare confidence or support for Jim Gavin. So, yeah, that was an interesting...
All right, well, we'll see whether that resurrects itself after Christmas or whether good cheer descends on Fianna Fáil after this. Not much good cheer. Yes, not much good cheer, though, at Leaders' Questions, the final Leaders' Questions of the year today, Joe.
Yeah, it was interesting, actually, because each of the speakers at the outset thanked everybody in the chamber, thanked everybody working in Leinster House, wished everybody Happy Christmas. And then they got down to the business, and the business was as per usual. There was some tough exchanges once again today between the government and opposition, mainly in relation, well, it initially was based on that ESRI report that came out, but it quickly pivoted really to the issue of housing and homelessness. And Piers Doherty was raising the fact that the government has presided over another year of house price increases. House prices are €31,000 dearer in the last 12 months. And I suppose the point that just jumps out, no matter how well or how hard you can save, if you're a young couple with two good jobs, you're running to stand still. And this is the point that I mean, Sinn Féin have been talking about this over and over, talking about the cost of living as well. And the ESRI report obviously shows today that they're going to, the government, the forecast is they'll get 35,000 houses this year and they'll get to 36,000 houses next year, which is far short of the 50,000 that's required. And the plan of 300,000 by 2030 will never be achieved at that rate. Now, I know that plan is sort of expected to be ramped up towards the latter years, but so that was the theme there. I mean, Simon Harris defending once again, saying they have done an awful lot, and putting it in context insofar as the population of the country is growing very rapidly. So and despite the fact that they have hugely ramped up the number of houses that are already been produced from a very, very low base, it's just not going near the demand that's there, you know. So that was the theme. It was the same, the Sock Dems and Richard Boy Barrett, People Before Profit, raising the same things, raising homelessness. And I mean, the government, they have their story, but I guess it's very hard coming up to Christmas when, as Richard Boy Barrett said, there are some families who are facing their third Christmas living in a hotel room or some sort of homeless accommodation, children.
And all that cost of living stuff, which opposition parties have been consistently raising at Leaders again and again and again and again and again, may resonate even more with an awful lot of families in January. Both those who are stuck in poverty and in homelessness, and also those who are working and trying to pay childcare, trying to pay rent or mortgages and paying ever higher food bills. Just one other thing about the Dáil term coming to a close, Juliette, is has it been a do-nothing Dáil? Mm. Because there were opposition claims that the very few number of bills passed indicated this was, as they've been saying from the get-go, a do-nothing Dáil.
A do-nothing Dáil, yeah. So the number they expect to have been enacted by the end of this year, by the end of 2025, is going to be 21. So the claim of a do-nothing Dáil has been obviously disputed by the government. I spoke to Government Chief Whip Mary Butler today, and she compared it to 2016 when 22 bills were enacted. In 2020, there were around 30 bills enacted, but a lot of them, 11 of them, were emergency COVID legislation. So they were forced through.
She's saying election years, there are inevitable slowdowns
exactly.
in the passage
yeah.
of legislation.
So the government was only formed in January. Committees weren't up and running until April. So they're talking about a truncated amount of time they had to do this. And she was also making the point, which I think is fair enough, that some bills are extremely complicated. She's talking about the mental health bill, which has hundreds and hundreds of amendments. Mm-hmm. And they all have to be, you know, agreed upon. They have to be voted on. And so it is a complicated process. She did say, you know, she pointed to the fact that various bills that have made it through, the rent pressure zones, obviously setting things up for next year, and also the vaping ban started its way through today. And then they expect there are 25 more bills that are before the Houses, as well as the 21 that they expect to be completed by the end of the year. So she was rejecting that claim. Interesting, the do-nothing Dáil claim was also being made by Labour in 2016, which, as you point out, is an election year, and was the fact that they were getting these, the same amount of bills through.
Of the big controversies seem to be taking a terribly long time to reach finality in the parliamentary process. Occupied Territories Bill, for instance, springs to mind, and it looks as if there's going to be a fairly big row about that in the new year.
Occupied Territories Bill and the Defence Bill that will end the triple lock. Both of those kicked into the new year again, and guaranteed there will be huge rows about both of them. The Occupied Territories Bill, because the question of service has been included. It doesn't seem like it will be, although I know the government have rolled back a little bit from what Thomas Byrne said the other day. And then the triple lock, obviously there's a huge debate to be had around the triple
defamation
lock.
Defamation bill.
Defamation bill as well, But there's no rush, because they're going on their holidays today for 25 days. The Dáil will be back on the 13th of January. And
Senators managed to get their leave at around lunchtime today, slightly before, I think.
And they're back on the
20th of January. So
they get 30 days.
Yeah.
So things are pressing, they do not appear to be that pressing.
Politicians will always tell you, you know, the harder work is done back home in the constituency than here.
And I don't disagree with that. In fairness, I don't disagree with that. There won't be a single politician who will not be sitting around for 25 days.
Okay.
However, the break will be nice.
We're coming to the end. Let's wrap things up. Have you done your Tú Sáidhe survey for Airne Gí? This is a survey they do amongst political correspondents, anonymised. And some of the questions, I really like this one when it comes in. The questions are really good because it really makes you think, who was the Minister of the Year? Who was the Junior Minister of the Year? The party leader, the opposition TD? What was the biggest story of the year? Was it Gaza, immigration, Ukraine, the speaking rights row, housing?
It's funny, when you're in it, it feels like the biggest row. Like the speaking rights row felt massive, massive. And it was also very exciting on TV, do you know what I mean? And, you know, all of that stuff for reporters, especially when you work in broadcast media, because you've got the bells, you've got the dinging of this and the shouts and this and that, you know, so that's very exciting. But now you're like, really, did we get that exercised over that and why?
And maybe that was a bit of a political anorak sort of a row in many ways. I mean, the presidential election, I think, threw up so many incredible moments. The presidential election, from everything from the withdrawal of Mairead McGuinness to the arrival of Jim Gavin, to the, you know,
the departure of Jim Gavin.
A stage when people were saying, this is a very boring election
campaign? Yeah, it was the most incredible campaign, really. And that was one that absolutely had the public transfixed, you know. Once it got going. Of course, we were all talking about the presidential election for months before it actually happened. And it was only when it did get going, I think that's when people really focused. But those big moments, they were, you know, they were history unfolding, really.
I mean, the one I enjoy is just watching the left, the parties centre-left and left,
But we didn't see much unity amongst them now in the fox hunting vote.
Excuse me, I got a bit of a cold. But I think that's one to watch for. It was interesting this year, it'll be interesting next year. Can they be cohesive? And yet, at the end of the day, we know when the general election comes, they're going to be fighting each other for seats anyway.
And they're already nominating people for the by-elections next year. There's going to be no single unity
transfer
candidate.
Pacts, and they can agree on a set of principles, isn't that right? I suppose just that theme of the unity of the left. I mean, the politician who won the year has to be Catherine Connolly, isn't that right? I mean, coming out of nowhere, with people not exactly tipping her as a winner at the very start, apart from those people who are very committed to her campaign, starting a grassroots campaign, running it her way, answering questions her way, doing debates her way,
doing podcasts her way. She did it a different way, and I think I'll speak personally. I underestimated her. I think, as a journalist, I had a perception of her in the chamber. She keeps journalists at arm's length, and at the time of campaigns, you expect, or you're used to, a bit more cozying up or a bit more plumassing from politicians. And there was none of that from Catherine Connolly. She went about her business quietly. She built up a massive groundswell of support. And then seeing her operating and talking to and having the crack with students in particular, I was amazed. And I just thought that was so impressive. She was in Cavan on a canvas, and it was Halloween, and she was putting on a wig that a student hadn't even asked her to put on, a comedy wig, and she just grabbed it off and popped it on her head. And it was like, not too many people would do that with broadcast cameras around and phones around. And she was just quietly having the crack with them. And it was really, it was a sight to behold.
The person who you used to see that side of her, and it wasn't because I was joining their table, but when Catherine Connolly was sitting across from Thomas Pringle, the former independent TD who's based in Killybegs, you could see from a sort of across the Leinster House canteen that there was that side to her. Mm-hmm. And it was remarkable because you wouldn't usually see it either with your engagement with her or in the chamber either. Mm. And it did come through in the presidential election. But I think the answer to your question is yes, you know, she won.
Yeah.
Keepy Uppies went a very long way for her amongst the young people too.
One of my favourite moments was the gin agus elder flower that herself and Heather had promised each other on the campaign. Yeah. And it was just a lovely moment between all the candidates, the successful candidate and the failed candidate at the end of the campaign. And at a time, I suppose, when we've seen so much division and darkness in the world, we won't go near the international. Mm. You'll be able to talk about all of those stories on your new podcast, Paul. But certainly very depressing on that front. So it was nice to see them toasting each other with gin agus elder flower.
Everybody coming back together after a bruising campaign, really. Mm. Yeah.
Spirit of Christmas cheer. Yeah, we'll finish on that note, will we, Joe?
Yes, indeed. Happy Christmas to everybody, to all our listeners.
Happy Christmas. New Year.
He's wearing a white beard just for the podcast here.
Ho, ho, we'll see you in January. Happy Christmas. Yeah.